Welcome to Ever Beyond, Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, Okay, so I'm going to start that again. Every single time. I thought I did it really smoothly today. Oh well, here we go. Anyway, October 20th, 2013. This is Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond the Info, No Borders Radio. This is Ever Beyond, and I am JP, and my guest tonight is Tony Paschek. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Sideways Sunday continues.
Sideways Sunday continues. I'm also on the wrong microphone. How's that?
That's good.
No, I'm still...
I can hear you fine. There's a little
bit of cutting out, but it's not as it was previously, so we're making progress.
Yeah, and hang on. Oh, that's good. Right, okay. I don't know what happened. I don't know if somebody's messing with me, if they can get in and mess about with my Ubuntu, but it was perfectly set up about 20 minutes ago, and that just before it's restarted, everything went awry. So I've no idea what's going on. I never have an idea what's going on. It must be, what's that thing? What we were talking about before, Neptune versus Mars.
Yes, the polarities and the energies that are really mixing it up right now.
Mixing it up with the Daily Show. So, Tony.
And we also had the full moon eclipse, so I think energetically that's affecting things too.
This is the blood moon, and, you know, yes. We're also just over a week away from Halloween, the time when... the veil is thin, as they call it, you know, the veil has been thinning anyway, so I've no idea what it's going to be like this year. I have a feeling that it might be a good idea to just stay at home and don't answer the door.
Which is a beautiful segue to something that I just listened to you. I tried to Skype it to you, but I forgot that you can't watch video while you're doing a broadcast, so... one of the people that I occasionally go to get an idea of what the astrological energies are that we're going through this week is Tom Lesher. I think many people know him. He's fairly well known on the internet. And what I found absolutely staggering was that the things that we were talking about on the show this morning when my guest didn't show up, and I just kind of winged it, and we had this impromptu show. The things that we were discussing on that show is exactly what he is talking about, these astrological energies that we are coming into. And it's going to be a six-week period of this polarity intensification and also these energies working with each other to bring about, literally, a new paradigm, a new reality, and it is worth people listening to what he's about, because I feel it actually is quite accurate. We're already seeing over the last few days really intense manifestation of what he's speaking of, so it's already begun. And it is essential for us to understand these polarities are going to be coming up, and literally there is going to be, to take stuff from his video, and I will freely admit I'm stealing it from his video, because it's already confirmed in my own experience thus far over the last few days, if not this last week.
And we're also, you know, it's not just you. You know, yeah, I was talking about stuff earlier on that seemed to apply to most of the people that I know, and then you've got your stuff going on, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that he brought to illumination was is that there are going to be these energies coming out of our subconscious that absolutely need to be expressed. And that is our, in essence, the veil thinning, is that we've all been living, and I don't want anybody to take this personal, but I'm going to admit that I myself have still got work to do, and I still have places in my life I'm living a lie.
You don't say.
And this is the thing that we're in the transition of, is removing these illusions. This veil is thinning. These illusions cannot continue to exist. And this is what is very powerful about this Mercury and Neptune, and including Saturn energy and also the North Node of the Moon, is that what is fascinating about what he's talking about is that relationships that no longer serve us are going to be slipping away. And the relationships which are karmic relationships that go back eons of period that will better serve us will be emerging and coming to the forefront. Because we cannot continue to live the illusion. And I'll just put this forth, because we're already seeing it happen in government. The lies are coming apart. They cannot be sustained any longer. And these energies are just shredding these lies. And it's going to get even more intense, according to him, in 2014. We're going to see some massive power movements in 2014. We're not there yet. I'd rather just deal with the right here, right now, and what's coming in the next few weeks. So it's a video that's well worth looking at, and I'll try and drop this in Skype chat if I'm still signed in there.
Yeah. Have you got a title? What's the title of the thing so that people can...
It's astrology. It's Tom Lesher, TomLesher, astrology forecast for October 16th, 2013. And I'll drop that link in the chat right now. It is a fascinating look. It's about 18 minutes long. I wish I had a way to stream it so we could listen to portions of it and comment on it. I could actually try to do that. I don't know how effective it would be. But he has some very prescient and obviously points to make that you and I, and also Dale and Dave and Sally, were expressing in our morning chat. And that's what really stunned me, is that we had just finished discussing these things that are happening in our lives, and here this guy is talking about it. This is the energy of this week and for the next 6 weeks.
Well, that's something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of the things that I was saying is that in you know, relationships of people that surround me, which is, it's my little world, you know, I a small group of people who come around to visit me and, you know, I see on Facebook. But there's been a vast amount that are in a very polarized situation in their relationships, that they're either incredibly blissful and that things couldn't be better, or they're incredibly antagonistic and there's a lot of conflict and breakups and, you know, separations and divorce and all of that sort of stuff. So I find it very interesting. And then, of course, you know, that goes on to what diseases are going on in our bodies that also reflect the same situation. Now, I want to bring back what I was saying earlier, because this is extremely relevant and takes it into the realm of the esoteric teachings that I'm going on about all the time.
Yes.
We know, if you look at sevenrays.info, you can see the little diagram and you can see which rays operate through which chakra systems, which center, and... we see that in the diagram there, the seventh ray applies in the sacral center, but the vast amount of humanity, what we call, you know, average humanity or fallen humanity or whatever it is, the people who are still not awakened, experience this thing, which is the effect of the fifth ray in the sacral center. Now, how it got there is a long, long, long story, but suffice to say, it concretizes relationships, and it's a result of abuse. And this is why we abuse each other, because when that energy is in this center, it causes a concretization of relationships. It's kind of almost like an easy shortcut, but rather than evaluate each individual relationship as it is and respond appropriately, which is the normal way of being, that we respond in our pre-programmed way. And this is what people call sheeple or sleeple or whatever. And we have the opportunity here is being given to us to clear this energy out of our sacral centers, allow that energy to move to the brow center where we can start seeing clearly, and basically allow a whole different set of energies to move us and be us. And that's what we call the initiated or the ascended human. And this is the human being that is able to walk the galaxy to and I'll kind of sum up basically what it means is is essentially when you have a when you're presented with a person in front of you, if you're in the moment, if you're there in the present, you're able to respond appropriately. Now, if you're not in the present, you respond according to how things have gone in the past or how you've been trained, which is essentially a more extreme version of that. And you're dealing with a non-reality. You're dealing with past situations which may not necessarily apply. And that is not the cause of right. This is where all the mistakes happen, is when people respond without thinking and without feeling or being appropriate. And what we call right relationship is when you respond appropriately to the person in front of you. This could save your life, because you may find yourself standing in front of a very ferocious looking extraterrestrial, and you may need to respond in an appropriate way, but you've never been trained, you have no idea. But because you're able to be in the moment, you're able to respond appropriately and stay alive, basically. We will find ourselves confronted, I believe, very soon with a vast number of races who might just want to come and stay and have a cup of tea and talk about the weather or your life, and not want to eat you. Or, you know, it may not be a responsible thing to do to shoot them or shoot at them or point weapons or respond aggressively. There are different ways. There's protocols, and the best way is to be very, very polite. I think that works most of the time. Respond the way they're responding. So most don't want a relationship with a hostage. Yes. Yeah, to concretize, to make like concrete.
You broke up in that last little bit.
All right. Well, I was very flat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When I'm talking about concretizing a relationship, this is very much like in the old days. You know, you have the father of the house saying, "I'm the breadwinner. I earn the money. I come home. I expect this, that, and the other from my wife and my children." You know, everybody's got a fixed role. It's kind of safe for the dominator, and it's usually implemented using coercion and abuse. It's a domination matrix, and you know we're moving away from that. We don't want that. I don't want that. And this is right this moment. This is the point where we're saying, actually, no, we don't want any more domination at all, in any way, shape, or form. And whenever anybody's coming to it, whenever it's being presented to us, we're now responding to it, and that response may seem angry or appear to be violent, or but it's not vengeful. It's actually loving, and it's about stating your boundaries, and it's good for the person that you're doing it to as well, because they need to know that people have boundaries and that they should be respected. With concretized relationship, there aren't boundaries. There are no boundaries. Because the relationship is that of ownership or imprisonment. And again, we're doing freedom this time. Tony, did you get any of that?
Yes, I did. There was a couple of places where it was clipped, but I get the general gist. I think the confusion, and that happened this morning when you used the word concretized, we use the word cemented here. So it's just a matter of the lexicon and the language versus, you know, our language and the UK's language, that people may have missed what you were meaning by that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because what do I mean by concretization?
Okay.
Because this is the element, the essence of the fifth ray, concrete knowledge. It's facts, you know, things that appear to be facts. There are things that are facts, but there are things that are not facts. There are things that we think are facts that are not. Some things are opinions, so some
like
facts are
law.
Opinions. Like law, yeah. That's not facts, they're just different people's opinions. There is only, actually, we're talking about statutes and commercial law. In real law, common law, there is no, you know, galactic law, there are no, it is as it is, and there are only three laws, and, you know, do unto others is one of them, and they're not, they're laws like the law of gravity, rather than, you know, the laws of punishment.
Well, yeah, it's an energetic law instead of an opinion or a mental construct. Makes sense?
Yeah. Like, you know, so for instance, people talk about the Egyptian Egyptologists have a particular kind of standing of, you know, what they say is true. But that's really just an opinion, and they don't really know for sure. And what we're finding is that, you know, hieroglyphs have been around for longer, and they weren't necessarily Egyptian origin. They may have come from somewhere else and been there. So there are lots of opinions that are abounding as fact, and, you know, we see that on television all the time.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of fascinating, because what do we get taught in school? A bunch of opinions of people from previous lives.
And in a domination mode.
Yes.
You know, do as you're told, sit down, stand up, eat this, don't eat that, you know.
Yep.
It's basically trauma-based mind control, essentially, from the word go. You know, we're traumatized, and it's normal. You know, it's that treat as normal when you, you know, in order to train a dog, you have to break it. In order to train a horse, you have to break them.
Well, this is something that came up in my interview with Mark Stevens this last Friday, is that a lot of our institutions are governed by threat. If you don't do this, there is a consequence. If you don't believe this, there's another consequence. If you don't follow the rules, here's another consequence. And it's pretty much governing by gun or threat.
Yes, we call
veiled
that coercion.
Or unveiled. Yeah.
Coercion is the sort of
yes.
general heading of that. And so the domination matrix is held in place by coercion. Coercion causes fear, and that fear causes the fifth ray to collect and concretize our ways of relating to other people. You know, it makes us scared of relating, in fact. Whereas actually, we relate all the time, as we were saying before, we relate to everything. Absolutely everything in this universe we relate to.
It's a relationship.
Yeah, everything is a relationship. You know, when we when we have our tea in the morning, we have a relationship with the cow that made the milk. You know, we have a relationship with the chickens that we eat, even if they're wrapped up in foil, and they've been in the freezer, and they were made, you know, they were farmed and slaughtered. We have relationships. Everything is a relationship. And if in those relationships respect is not given, and what does that mean? Acknowledgement of beingness, you know, that's a good one. That's a nice one to start with, you know. Thank you for being. Thank you for growing. Thank you for sacrificing yourself for me. You know, we were talking about this before, about the guy who was, you know, the old polygraph experiments, Baxter, Clive Baxter.
Yes.
He did these experiments, he would, he was a polygraph guy, you know, that was his job. And
yep.
He tried.
Then he hooked it up to a plant.
Yeah. He tried various things. One of the things that he thought was, how can I hurt this plant? And he thought about, you know, cutting it with scissors. And then he thought about getting a match. And he thought, oh, yeah, that's going to do it. And right then, even just that, oh, yeah, that's going to do it, that feeling was picked up by the plant and it responded on the polygraph.
Right. He didn't even break the match out.
That's right.
When he went back and looked over the polygraph test, he figured out that it was when he had the thought.
Mm.
That's profound. I just read that in David Wilcox, book that I'm reading right now, The Source Field Investigations. He goes pretty deeply into that whole process that Baxter went through. And, you know, it'd be one thing if this guy did this once or twice or maybe 10 times, but he literally repeated this test. Other scientists repeated this test literally hundreds of times, and it worked every time. Plants register our thoughts.
That's right.
Our intention.
So the lead on from that is the next phase is when the guy comes, you know, his mate comes in into the lab, and he's just been cutting the grass, and the and the polygraph goes wild, and the plant's going murder, and he says, what have you been doing? Oh, I just cut the grass, you know. I said, oh, that was interesting. And then the other guy who'd eaten the sandwich with the lettuce in it, again the polygraph went wild. But they found that somebody who had been eating food that had been thanked, that respect was given to the lettuce, you know, the lowly lettuce. You know, people don't think much of them. I think you should consider your vegetables. Just call any vegetable, and a vegetable will respond to you. Actually, I might play that at the break. We have a relationship with the lettuces, with the peas, with the cucumbers. They're all living beings, and they all have an intelligence and a consciousness. I'm not saying that I'm Mr. Respectful of the world. You know, I'm just becoming more aware of it just now, and I'm sharing this awareness. But I still walk on grass blades without saying sorry. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and I think it's really.
But
it's
getting
not so much sorry, but it's a place of gratitude. Thank you for the life that you provide, the sustenance you provide to my body, and the healing you provide to my body. And literally going out into that field and taking in the beauty of the fauna and the flora that you are witnessing, and just take it in through a sense of gratitude, of being thankful for it and providing that beauty that you can experience just simply being a witness to it. I know that there has been number of times that as people who know me, I fly radio control sailplanes, and sometimes I just go out to this park that there's a cliff that I fly off of, because I'm upset and I'm twisted and I just need to escape. And usually when I go out on days like that, I end up being out there by myself, which is kind of interesting. But here's what's fascinating. The days that I'm going there, that I'm looking forward to it, I am immersed in something that I love to do, and I show up at that park and I'm grateful, I can tell you absolutely, every single time that I have gone there from a place of gratitude, I literally have bald eagles flying with my radio-controlled sailplanes on those days. It is bizarre how often that has happened. So there you go. Nature literally responds to our intention.
Oh, yes.
With intelligence.
Absolutely. I have a little piece of forest here, and we don't have many eagles, but our local hawk is a buzzard. It doesn't have a nice name like eagle, but it's still a very, very sort of a smaller version of it. And we hear it, you know, it's lovely to go through the forest and hear it, and it's flying above us. Because it's, you know, obviously, you know, who's messing about in my forest? So it's nice to have that little conversation between us and the creatures around us. And yeah, it's a conversation. Everything's a conversation. Everything's a relationship. And I'm learning this. I mean, as I say, I'm learning this all as I'm going, and I'm not the world's greatest expert. In fact, the way you learn things best is when you make the mistakes. So that's the way we learn, and that's the way we'll, you know. So I will continue making mistakes, and I'm unashamed about that, because that's the way I've learned how to make things better, is by going through all the different ways of making mistakes. And I still, you know, I still haven't got it right. You know, look at the beginning of the show. I thought it had it all together. Something reset on the system, and boom, I had no.
You know,
no,
it's
microphone.
All okay. I kind of came from a place, and it was something that I really misunderstood about my father. He's kind of a perfectionist, and I took that tool on board and started using it as a weapon against myself. And what is really interesting about that is that my father went through a challenging childhood. Being a farmer's boy in South Dakota back in the 40s, it was a difficult life. They had, I think it wasn't until the 50s, late 50s, that they actually got a telephone and electricity. So they were using an outhouse. They were hauling their water. It was a difficult life. He was pulled out of sixth grade to do work on the farm. He got a sixth grade education, and yet he went in the Air Force. After being in the Air Force, became a corporate pilot. He did all of his schooling on his own. And one of the things that he had to overcome himself was this low self-esteem. And what he would do is that he always strived for perfection. It was a tool that really worked well for him. However, when I got that tool, I really beat myself up with it. And what I discovered in that process, and it took a long time to rid myself of that, and there's still residual effects of that there, and I'm still working on that. But perfection in itself is imperfect, because nothing is perfect that we can do. And my biggest lessons, my biggest growth, has always been as the result of my biggest mistakes. So there's a blessing in getting things wrong, making the mistake, tripping over yourself. And I can tell you this, the things that I get right, I learn nothing from that. There's no growth.
So, here's to mistakes.
Yes, cheers.
May we continue to make more and more mistakes. There is, you know, we know, we see this in the military. There seems to be so much at stake that making a mistake would cause other people to die, or other people to suffer in some way.
Oh, the seriousness, the drama.
Yeah, the big drama of it. It's and this is part of the coercion. You know, if you make this tiniest mistake, even if, you know, if you fill out the form wrong, you could be fined $1,000. You know, that sort of stuff. We're pressurized.
You know, Tom Lesher talked about that in his video, is that these energies are literally putting a lot of pressure on the planet's consciousness right now, on everybody. And this is where the left brain, the ego aspect, is really getting hammered. And it needs to be, because this is the process of the subconscious getting past the ego and getting expressed what our true desire really is.
So, we have a pressure. And again, like you say, you know, you had that Tom Lesher commentary on it. And there's also, we've had solar flares in the last week, which
very intense,
I believe, have been compressing the surface of the planet. I've had headaches. Lots of people have had headaches, felt literally under the weather.
There were some pretty intense earthquakes, too.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's being squeezed out, and what is kind of coming to the surface is old stuff. It's got to be purged, and it's old stuff, and it's not only our old stuff from our incarnations, but also our family stuff and things that our parents were thinking and how they were wrong. And you know, that's part of what we transformed when we were children. As we grow up, we transform our parents' mistakes because they didn't learn from them, and we learned from them.
You know, I think that's really important to maybe cover a little bit deeper, because I was one of those people who was kind of resentful at my parents about some things. And what I came to realize, and it was, again, a process, it took some time, is that, you know, compared to other people, and I spend a lot of time with other people in recovery, as most people know, but I also spend time with other people, just regular people, and my interaction with other people in my building. It's come building. All these people have had their life stories. And it's really interesting to look at how many people are really pissed off about their upbringing. And what it made me reflect on is that I was actually raised in a very loving family. Yeah, there were some things that were out of alignment, let's put it that way. But my folks were doing the best they could with what they had. Some of those tools were bent and broken. Those were the tools given to them by their parents. They simply didn't know better. They didn't have any ill intention towards me. But the way I took it and became resentful over it, bottom line, it only damaged me. It constantly was in what I'm trying to get across to people that I speak to about this, is that when we hold on to this resentment, this judgment, this anger, who is it damaging? The person who offended you yesterday is walking a free man. It doesn't do anything to them. However, what we're doing to ourselves is damaging and destroying our moment right here, right now, where our true power is. It's diminishing our effectiveness, and it's diminishing our spirit, and it's diminishing our energy. So ultimately, to be in that state of resentment, anger, judgment, is only damaging to the consciousness that's emitting it. So you gotta ask yourself this question. Well, I'm justified. What they did wasn't right. Well, yeah, maybe so, but why are you literally torturing yourself?
Exactly. We keep, you know, it's like there used to be a graffito in London, you know, help the police, beat yourself up. You know, it was a joke, but in a way, this is what we've internalized the bully. We've internalized the patriarchy. We don't need to live in a patriarchal society to have the same, to have our thoughts do it to us. It's easier, but it doesn't have to be. And so, you could be walking around in a much more open society outside of yourself, but you don't realize it because you're still beating yourself up in a patriarchal way. You could be carrying all of that stuff from your ancestors and their ancestors and their ancestors before them.
Yeah, and I think that is this process that we're going through of this purging of this unnecessary energy, this unnecessary condemnation. And, you know, I'm trying to fit in. Tracy asked a question. JP and Tony, have you both heard about the planet losing gravity and the planet core less magnetic as well?
Well,
do you have an answer for that?
I got a smart-ass really answer.
Okay.
Well, basically, if we lose gravity, we'll gain levity and everything will be better. But, you know, in terms of serious shit department, we've got so many things that are going on. I mean, there's the sun kind of going foof more and more recently, and these magnetic filaments kind of uncoiling from the surface, and that seems to be sort of going to a potential maximum soon. These magnetic filaments, we never used to have these magnetic filaments, and they're kind of very commonplace now, and it's like NASA just talk about them. Oh yes, and the magnetic, blah, blah, blah.
Well, are they magnetic or are they electrical? Because here's the thing that I'm standing on. Never a straight answer from NASA.
Not.
And I don't trust their science. I just don't. We've been lied to about so much, and I think NASA knows damn well what's really going on, but they're not telling us. And that's just my sense, and maybe I've become very jaded, and I'm willing to admit that, but I just don't trust anything NASA tells us. I mean, there's been too many things that have popped up, especially in the last year, certain things happening around the sun, certain starships literally around the sun. They'll show up for a couple of minutes on the SOHO satellite pictures, and then they get scrubbed. So they're hiding stuff all the time. And my sense of this is that, and this has been known for some time, all the planets in our solar system are heating up. All of them are changing in their luminosity. All of them are changing in their gravitational orientation and fields. Something very profound is happening to our entire solar system. And I think this is the energetic wave coming from the black sun or the center of our galaxy. And there's some very interesting things that have been written about this, pulling Terrence McKenna's work together, some of David Wilcox's work together. And David actually was one who took a number of the different sciences and discoveries from Russian scientists, the Terrence McKenna material, and some other material, and started putting together this thing. And one of the things that Terrence McKenna did with the I Ching is started charting time and different things that have happened in time. And what he found was is that linking this to a new NASA discovery that it's very little spoken about is that when they can get a picture of a galaxy from the top, what they noticed using it's a special type of photography that they use to look at these galaxies. And they can see literally these energetic waves being emitted by galaxy centers. And what they found was these waves, just literally like a pebble being dropped in a pond, these waves, the further they are out in the galaxy, the lower the frequency of the wave. As they go in, looking at the ripples of this wave in towards the central sun, each successive wave going out through the galaxy is a slightly higher frequency. Which is interesting, because going with Terrence McKenna's work, and then also, if you want to, we can include the Mayan calendar, which goes back literally to the beginning of Earth, is that all the Mayan pyramids are 9 tiers. That is 9 tiers of consciousness for the people who have decoded this. And literally, it starts with the elemental world, just lava, water, air, and the formulation of a planet. And each step up the pyramid is a raising in the consciousness of the planet. And it actually coincides quite well with these galactic energetic waves. And one of the things that they found really interesting is that the I Ching, when matched with the Mayan calendar in these energetic waves, is that there were certain times in our history, at least what we're able to determine in our history, including back to the fossil record, that certain things happened on the planet, literally looking at the fossil record, species and animals on the planet changed overnight. There's no transition. There was no evolution. The species just disappeared and something else appeared. Very interesting information. And they coincide with what the Mayans were talking about, and also what the I Ching predicts through Terence McKenna.
I think the interesting thing of the Mayan calendar and the way that this thing is constructed is that it's very, very mathematical, very mm-hmm. geometric, and it works these 20s yes. and 13s and things like that. And yes. These nine levels that you refer to refer to these stages, and each stage is 20 times more concentrated than the last. So the first level of the pyramid, the first step, represents a billion years for each
yes.
each cycle, and each step is divided into 13 cycles, 7 positive and 6 negative, or the other way around.
Correct. Yes, and days and nights.
Days and nights, that's right. Whatever.
the compression of time also happens during this as well.
That's right. And this is the important spiral. Thing. This is the important thing, is that each cycle is a reflection of the larger cycle, and the same amount of evolution that goes on in one cycle goes on in all of the other cycles. So the evolution that takes... that took billions of years to go from molecular consciousness to cellular consciousness, for instance, is one turn of the spiral, and we've gone up 9 turns of the spiral, or 8 turns maybe at the moment, because I was relating earlier to you, Tony, that I feel that we're out by a year, that this is really 2012 and that was 2011, etc., and that, you know, we're headed for the big thing in December, because that's the time then ISON appears, whatever it might be. Now I've seen, there's this picture of ISON, and I even got it off the Hubble scope itself, but it turns out that there are three, it looks like there are three objects in it.
Yep.
And according to the explanation of this, is that those three objects are actually the same object, taken three times, but it's spinning around, and so it's reflecting in a different way. And so it's not three things, but it's one thing, but it's spinning around and it's moving. So apparently that's why you get these three images on the Hubble image. That is actually a composite image taken over 3 days, and the thing was in a different position, so they turned the brightness right up, so it looks like one object. So
right, I would question again, because it's coming from NASA, but there's a lot of independent observatories that people are trying to get some of this information out and what they're observing. Yeah, and they may be messed with too, but I found it very interesting that Comet ISON has changed its predicted trajectory twice now.
As the brakes go on.
Yeah, and I think that is very interesting, and it's just my sense that Comet ISON really ain't a comet. I think it's a ship. And I think it's a harbinger of things to come, or possibly the first contact party. I'm not saying that that's the truth. It's just a sense, a feeling I get. I'm already absolutely, utterly convinced there are massive ships around protecting this planet right now. And one of the main reasons that I really stand on is this being concrete, that we have had some horrendous earthquakes, that if you look back 25 years, that same kind of earthquake leveled cities. And now we're having those kind of intensity earthquakes, and one or two people are killed in a 6.2 quake. That never happened 20 years ago. Many people would get killed. So there's something energetically going on to protect this planet. Yeah, our sun is doing some very bizarre things. There's also been some pretty bizarre things that have been photographed around the sun, pulling some of this energy off the sun, and I think ultimately protecting us, because, and I'll make this statement again as I did in the previous show, is that it's their planet, their garden, and they are protecting their investment. They want to see us succeed, because we have failed how many times already? 3 or 4, Jay.
How many times this week?
Well, I'm talking about the larger cycle, Lemuria, Atlantis, the destruction of those. And I think the Mayans talk about 4 destructions. We're on the last chance, is what I'm trying to put forth, according to what little recorded history we have of those very, very ancient cultures. And yet there's evidence all across the planet that there was something going on this planet that we cannot do today. We can't even attempt it today. So how did they move these stones, say, in the Andes from 2 mountain valleys away that are 400-ton stones? And them perfectly, absolutely perfectly milled. You can't even get a razor blade in between them. How did they do that?
Concrete liquefaction through sound? I don't know. I have no doubt that we are at a lesser degree of technological advancement than we were, than Earth has been in the past. I think we've definitely suffered cataclysm after cataclysm after cataclysm, because it's a rough part of the galaxy, really. That's why people don't live here. It's a bit like Scotland, you know. It's lovely, it's beautiful, but it's got midges which destroy all joy. Dementors.
That's like mosquitoes here?
Well, no-see-ums.
Right.
They're not mosquitoes.
So that's a bit like the mosquito here.
Sort of like the mosquito, but invisible and multitudinous. You know,
right.
And they get in your eyes and the ears and everywhere. That's horrible. They're horrible.
Yeah, I think they're a bit like sand.
Asteroids, meteors, comets, they might be pretty, but if they're too dense, it's a bit of a dangerous life to live. And I think that this planet goes through areas like that on a periodic basis, and that may be that also. I think that that the planet itself knows it. The planet gets anxious, and that's why we start wars as well. That's a thought, isn't it?
Yes, that's why they're doing it, to keep us distracted from the awakening. And I think I was absolutely thrilled. Do you know how many? What the percentage of people calling their representatives in Congress was that said, hell no, you're not going to do this in Syria? You know what the percentage was?
Quite a lot.
Yes versus no. The no's were something like 97% that you're not going to do this. People are waking up. People are starting to, and what's more important is they're actually taking action and saying something. So I was very excited and thrilled about that, and that's really created a problem for the financial psychopaths, is that they didn't get their war, so the military-industrial complex wasn't able to get rid of all their weapons so they can make more weapons and create more debt, more money, because the money that's created now is nothing but debt. That's a problem. That's why the government was shut down. Looking at how things happened, the Syria war didn't happen. Oh my God, the government can't function anymore because we're out of money. Right?
Well, but hang on. Somebody explain this to me. If the government is shut down, how come there's these government people saying, "Oh, you can't do that"? Government shut down. There's people all over the place. Oh, you can't go out on a boat in Florida. There's government shut down. So,
well, it actually cost more because of what they were doing.
To whom?
To shut down the government.
Who's paying for this?
Right.
This enforcement of some what must be martial law. He says.
Yes.
Well,
the psychopaths have control of all the printing presses across the planet. Please, people, understand, we talked about this earlier. It's not about money. Money doesn't exist. It's pure illusion. And we really need to put laser focus on this issue. It's not the government. It's the financial psychopaths that are running everything. And until we focus on the financial psychopaths and remove them, we're going to have nothing but problems and more of a police state and a fascist state, which is already in place. And I'm very passionate about this. We are not a democracy. We were never meant to be a democracy. I want to strangle people every time people say, "What about our democracy?" We were never meant to be a democracy. We were meant to be a constitutional republic who uses the democratic electing of representatives to send them to a government that has the judiciary, the executive branch, and I forget what the other branch is. I did that in the previous show, but three different branches of government, so there is no sequestration or conglomeration of power in one branch of the government. It was supposed to be balanced. And it's worthwhile noting that what happened as far as the government being turned back on, unfortunately, is that what was signed into law is basically there is no debt ceiling. Obama can do whatever the hell he wants to do to print more money.
So, he's just got dad's credit card.
Yes.
Yeah.
And going back to the financial psychopaths, they run all the printing presses on the planet. They're the ones who are creating the money, which is actually a debt instrument because it's not backed by anything other than your own hard work. So they're stealing from you through fraud that is unbelievable when you start digging into this stuff. So if they have control of all the printing presses, ultimately, it's not about money. Then what is it about? It's about domination and control of the entire planet. That's what psychopaths do. It's all about power.
It's never enough.
Yes.
Nothing is ever enough.
For a psychopath, more power just means getting more power. That's never enough.
Which is better.
It never satisfies. More and more exertion of domination and control over the masses. That's what makes them psychopaths. And people try to figure this stuff out, and I had a very interesting conversation with a number of different people. You cannot figure this out. That is a different type of consciousness. You will never find any reason in it, so don't try and figure it out. Propose a different paradigm, a different way of doing things, and sidestep it completely. What they really want us to do is fight the system they installed so then they can bring down martial law. And what I propose, what came, you know, through Mark Stevens on my radio show Friday, is that there are people who are really taking the action to bring forth these different ways of beingness through trade and through voluntarism. And that is a way around this system of corporate psychopathic control. We don't need money. It's already been demonstrated that it's pure fraud. It's pure fiction. So it's time for us to completely sidestep or step out of the box, out of the matrix, and start doing things in our own community by just trading goods and services. No money. And for people who are challenged by this thought, my grandparents, both sides, my mom and my father, both were farmers' kids. They did this all the time less than 60 years ago. A farmer would have a breakdown with his tractor. He didn't have a welder. He would go next door, borrow the guy's welder, and exchange milk, eggs, hay, cows, whatever was necessary to make the exchange. They didn't use money. They didn't need money. They were self-sustaining, and they helped each other.
That's right. So, we're going to take a break now. It's the top of the hour. And in dedication to that great glowing ball of plasma in the sky that is currently buffeting our atmosphere and making us all get headaches and feel rather sick and pressurized, this is Pink Floyd with the Fat Old Sun.
This is Wolf Spirit Radio.
This is Ever Beyond with JP.
And yes, here we are, back with Tony Paschek. It's Ever Beyond October.
Well, I got back just in time.
October the 20th, 2013. Here we are. I think the event is, you know, I've been saying this all year, and it's the sense of tension and excitement kind of building up seems to be,
yes.
Seems to be like a, it's odd, because I'm thinking about like the webbot and all of the things that the webbot said would happen, and I'm wondering if it's just a year out. Sometimes when I do, you know, write my inner guidance, it's for times when I read it rather than the times that I write it, and that can be years later. I've found some very interesting writings that I've just kind of randomly pulled out of a box somewhere, and it seemed to be speaking to myself directly at that moment. It's quite odd. Life's
yes,
like that.
David Wilcock has been doing that for some time. He records all his dreams and everything, and I got to give him credit for having the discipline of doing that. I started doing it a while ago, and I've back last, I think it was last September, a year ago, maybe last September, November, I had this very, very intense dream that I was in this building similar to the apartment building that I'm in, and it literally was raised up out of the ground, kind of started floating around, came back down, and I got out of the building, or no, the building disappeared, and I came back to the ground on a bus, and there was all these people in the bus that were wondering what in the hell is going on. And I remember getting out of the bus and the people kind of following me and looking, some of them looking questioningly at me. And they were asking about, what about the three quarters of the other people who have no idea what's going on? And I told them, you can't wake them up. They want to be asleep. And then we went to this pasture where there was this, like a trailer, a small travel trailer that was parked out in this pasture. And we were sitting at this table and there was a radio there. and I'm listening to the radio, and I open my mouth, and all these symbols started falling out of my mouth. What? 3 months later, I meet Dave Corso, and he tricks me into doing a radio show. Something that was never even in my awareness or consciousness to do. And I thought that that was just so profound, because I actually wrote down the dream, and then when, I think it was after being on radio for 3 months, I'm going back through my dream journal, and I go, oh my God, I totally forgot about this. Pretty weird.
So, symbols pouring out of your mouth, Mr. Patrick. But from your mouth, I'd like to pass by your foot, because the last time I spoke to you, you had an issue going on, and you had some, like, flesh-eating bug that has been eating away at your foot. That was a few months ago, so... Do you want to give us an update? Tell everybody what's been happening with you.
Yeah. That was... I stepped on a belt buckle getting out of the shower back in July. And being diabetic, it was something I was concerned about, and I really kept a close eye on it. And what ended up happening is that I put it in salt foot baths, and really, I really took care of it. And for 2 weeks, I paid attention to it, and it really didn't hurt, but I have pretty severe peripheral neuropathy as the result of my diabetes. And so I don't feel a whole lot in my feet. And keeping an eye on it seemed clean and everything, and I eventually forgot about it after 2 weeks of monitoring it. And about a week and a half later, I woke up in the morning, and my heel was on fire. And having the peripheral neuropathy, when your heel is on fire, you know this is really serious stuff. This is bad. This is really bad. And the first thing that went through my consciousness was, this is the way diabetics lose their feet. And diabetics lose their feet all the time, every day, literally by the hundreds, just in the U.S. alone. And so I'm thinking, okay, gotta go to the doc, which I really, really don't want to do. And I went, and they gave me some antibiotics, but they told me on the way out, if it gets any worse or changes at all, you need to go to the emergency room immediately. And I got home, and it just kept getting more and more painful. And eventually, I think it was about 24 hours later, very late at night, I'm thinking, I can't do this. I have to go. So reluctantly, I went to the emergency room, and they immediately put me on some extremely powerful full-spectrum antibiotics intravenously. I mean, they were pumping this directly in my blood. It takes about, to do that by IV, it takes about an hour and a half. And they told me, you need to come back 24 hours from now, because we can't do it any sooner. But you have to make it 24 hours later. So come back same time next night, and we'll see what's going on. We took cultures of what's going on with your heel, looked at the... We're going to do a blood panel, so forth and so on. I ended up doing that for the three following nights in a row. The fourth night I show up there, they said, you ain't going anywhere, because whatever it is we're dealing with, your white blood cell count doubled in the last 24 hours. So what that tells us is that these full-spectrum, extremely powerful antibiotics we're giving you are not doing anything. This could be life-threatening. And I'm thinking to myself, what? It's an infection. But reluctantly, I said, okay, check me in. And they immediately slapped me into an isolation unit, which I really wasn't understanding that either. But that's when it started kind of escalating and getting a little more alarming. You know, they don't put you in isolation units for nothing. Literally, every single person that goes into an isolation unit has to be gowned up, gloved, and masked. And on the way out, they get rid of that stuff immediately. So I'm thinking, okay, this is a little more serious than I guess I had any clue of. And I was visited first thing, 5 a.m. in the morning, by a surgeon. And what she instructed me with was is that this is extraordinarily serious. We still don't know what the infection is, and we need to see if it's in your bone. Because if it's in your heel bone, we will have to remove your foot. You're diabetic. If it's in your bone, antibiotics cannot get into the bone, and it will travel through the bone marrow and blood in the bone, and it could quite likely kill you. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, 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 wait a minute, Dr. Burns. Let's back up a couple of sentences. How do we go from heel infection to amputation in two sentences? And she said, this is how serious this is. Your life is at threat right now. Be grateful that if it's necessary that we're only taking your foot. And at that point, you know, I'm laying in a hospital bed and my head is spinning. I'm seeing stars because this is unbelievable. And she said, we're going to try to get you in surgery as soon as possible, but I can't get you in until 6 o'clock tonight. That's the only opening at this point. And this is so serious that if there is an opening sooner, we're going to be coming to get you. And I'm thinking, okay, this is a little dark. And they actually got me into surgery by 11 o'clock in the morning. And I remember going into surgery going, you know what? They take my foot. I don't want to be here anymore. I'm not playing. That was my firm resolve to the universe. You take my foot, I'm checking out. Fortunately, when I was awakened in the recovery room, I got to see my left foot was still there. I was extraordinarily pleased with that.
That's a nice feeling, isn't it?
Yes. The thing that was interesting in this entire process was how much fear it brought up. When that fear machine gets going, all the fear crap comes up. And I mean stuff from decades ago. And it was very interesting in that after I got out of the hospital and I spoke to you, you gave me some links to some certain sites that, do you recall what those sites' names were? I actually do have them in my,
The Louise Hay material.
Yes.
Yes. Basically, you know, if, because this is where you presented to me, you know, you just had this issue, and like you understand that there are reflections. It's part of the big hologram. If you have a disease in a place, that place is telling you something,
right?
And
your body's literally speaking to you. And this is something that I was actually aware of a while ago, and I read a book. I cannot find it for the life of me. I've tried to find this book, and it may have literally been written by Louise Hayes, because the information is very similar. And its premise is that all spiritual malady, all spiritual misalignment manifests physically as sickness in the human body. No exception.
Exactly.
Now, what I found really interesting is that there was a couple of people, well, actually a number of people, and I want to thank you so much, people donated to my health fund. Thank you. Bless you for doing that, because I am on a very limited income, and the hospital bills I'm still going to have to contend with, but it was extraordinarily helpful. JP, you helped me with energetic healing, and there was a number of other people who participated that participated in that as well. And it was really helpful for me because I was having all this spiritual energy, all this spiritual fear come up that I had dealt with partially, but I had buried it. And what was really fascinating was the connection of the left heel in the Louise Hayes material. And I think I may crash my system doing this, but we'll see if I can get away with this in bringing this up. So, folks, bear with me, because it was very illuminating what exactly was going on with me, and I was able to make connections that I never made before in looking at this Louise Hay material.
So you were brought to an extreme point at that. I mean, there you had nothing more to lose, you know.
Right.
Because, yeah, you had quite a lot to lose by carrying on the way you were going. And you also recognized that this was the result of, there's got to be something in me that's doing that kind of idea.
Yeah. But here's the thing, you know, we're all just kind of trying to travel through this journey, doing the best we can. And I feel so blessed in what Dave did in bringing me into the Wolf Spirit pack and allowing me to have a platform to express myself and participate with like consciousness other individuals. And for a very long time, when I was doing all my research, I cannot begin to express how alone and isolated I felt, because nobody wanted to hear the stuff I was talking about. Not my family, not my brother, not my sister, not my friends. In fact, I have lost friends as the result of talking about the stuff we talk about daily on this radio. Friends have left me. Guess they weren't friends, really. But what it did for me is that it wrapped me into this community of like-minded individuals who have a great deal of research they've done, and we're kind of putting all this stuff together, all these pieces, and we're assisting each other by each conversation we have every day. That's the beauty of this. We're sharing information, and it's healing. And what was really interesting in this is that I kind of had a clue, okay, there's something spiritual going on here, and you actually contacted me. I think it was you. I didn't actually reach out to you. I kind of gave you some information on what's going on, and I think you just dropped these links to me, and you said, you might want to look at this. So I'm looking at this information, this material, and it was absolutely fascinating in what it revealed about the infection in my heel. I'm trying to find the exact.
Yeah, interesting. It's called
the
heel
exact
as well.
Link. Yes, because the foot is about moving forward, right?
That's right.
So, what was? I'm trying to do the search and then also talk at the same time, multitasking here. What was absolutely fascinating about that is that I have to fully admit that I have been feeling rather stuck for a number of years. Living in low-income housing, having to do the government dole, which I'm not happy about. I've tried to go back to work 3 different times. Each time I've done that, it cost me more in my medical bills because I lose all medical coverage by going to work. At the end of each year, I owed more just in medical bills alone than what I made that year.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, you're on the bleeding edge of what, you know, the government-sponsored health plan.
Right.
Really. And it's, you know, you're there and you've got a voice. So you can change that situation because that's where you are. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Because the energy goes both ways. Where if you feel that you're being oppressed, then along the same line that they're pressing, you can press back. find out right, where you're being pressed. So let's go back to your heel.
So back to the heel.
So
and
left
I just,
heel.
It looks like I found the link to the heel.
And when I I was talking to you, Tony, one of the things that I felt was, it felt like your foot had been nailed to the floor. That was the impression that I got, and that you're just kind of going around in circles, and it's your left foot which is like, it's like your past and all of the, you know, the things that magnetically hold you, you know. So that was the impression that I had, so what did you find? What have you found? You I hopefully have stalled enough so that you can get that.
And that was very accurate. Your perception is very accurate. Is that I've been spinning around in this research and not really getting anywhere and just kind of sinking lower. And it was also very interesting, the Pisces connection in the feet. The Pisces rules the feet, toes, lymphatic system, and adipose tissue. Lymphatic system, defense against bacteria and virus, surrounds and isolates invaders. Feelings of defensiveness and isolation. And that's essentially what has become part of my life, is that I wouldn't say that I would be so defensive, but certainly the isolation. And I do feel isolated because people don't want to wake up. And it is my mission to help people who do want to wake up to wake up, to get them the information. And I'm not surrounded by a whole lot of people who want that. So that has been one hell of a challenge to get over. And I quite frankly think that had Dave not provided me the platform that was given me, I'd probably be in a really, really bad place by now. Because it's given me a voice.
You know, it's very interesting, Tony, the transformation that happens when you start finding your voice. Because, first of all, the first thing you realize is that because people are listening to you and not tuning out, that means that they feel kind of similar to what you're feeling, and that they feel less alone because you're saying what you're saying. It works both ways. It's interesting.
Right. Yeah, and this gets back to a link that you sent me earlier today, the two-wire thing. You remember that?
Oh, yes.
By Cliff High in the Webbot, or the Half-Past Human link. That is very interesting because it's speaking of these energies that these psychopaths have been using on us. We need to start understanding that's a two-way street. We can send that energy back, and it was quite entertaining to see what they were proposing. And it's basically, and pardon me, people, shit on the royals. Is that when you take that daily trip to the restroom, be focusing on the psychopaths and dump it on them. It's a two-way street. They opened up that avenue to your energy. They literally steal your energy through the fraud of money. That avenue is open. It goes both ways. You can send back some really horrendous energy their way because that avenue is open. And it's an ongoing experiment at this point. But it was kind of one of those suggestions that I thought was kind of humorous, and I'm going to go ahead and see what happens because I'm going to participate in it. And we'll see what happens.
And it's
not like they don't deserve it, because essentially that's what they've been doing to us.
Yeah, so the reference to the two wires were that in Dick Cheney's artificial bypass heart machine thing that he has pumping his blood around that thick syrupy oil full of vermin and worms and leeches and parasites
bats and snakes
and all other things dark. I'm sure he's called Grandpa by someone. he has a pacemaker thing, and the idea was that they would propose to see if they could influence the this thing. I mean, basically, what it does is it's one of those machines that where they go clear. What a defibrillator. He's got one of those, and what it does is every time it detects his heart going arrhythmic, which is I've found that arrhythmia is you know, a lot of people who have sort of control issues get arrhythmia. Interesting. That it basically detects arrhythmia and then goes clear and kind of kickstarts him back again. It kind of reboots him. All kind of while it's going on. Anyway, so he's got this thing, this really high-tech you know, internal defibrillator, and these things have got a wireless remote. You know, it's got a remote controller, right? So, obviously, yep. You know, it can be hacked into, you know, you just find an infrared transmitter somewhere in a room that's wired to something on the internet, hack into it, and or a radio, you know, whatever. That it could be hacked, and so we discovered that actually it's even more controllable than just a couple of little wires. But yeah, you could get the thing to go off every 5 seconds. That might be interesting for him. But you know, he has you know heart problems. Yeah, he's got big heart problems. Bless his heart. Bless his heart. Dick Cheney. So anyway, yes, Dick Cheney's got this little heart machine that kind of restarts his heart. I read an article yesterday that that describes him having a small operation recently, because what they wanted to do was actually take out the wireless chip in it so that it couldn't be activated by somebody with an Android phone, for instance. Bluetooth transmitter.
Yeah, that was actually on Before It's News about 4 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was funny, the idea. And then I saw this article today about Cliff. Energetically.
There's more to be revealed energetically. And yeah. What is interesting about the left side of the body, represents receptivity, taking in feminine energy, women, the mother. So that was an interesting little bit of information.
Yeah, so and I would say instantly Pisces mother. Have you got a Pisces mother?
Right. Yep.
You have?
Yes. Both my parents are Pisces.
You got Pisces parents?
Yes.
Holy crap. So what happens when Pisces parents get together is... What happens?
You know, I don't...
Do they fight?
There's some day that they may be listening to this program. And I just that's
your
their
experience.
Relationship.
Your experience.
My experience.
Yeah.
You know, it was really hard to understand. And on top of that, my father, being a corporate pilot, was rarely at home during my upbringing. He was on call 24/7, 365 days a year, and he flew a lot. By the time I got out of high school, I'd been in 13 different schools. So yeah, probably a little resentment there on my part.
Yeah, it's what we call an army brat. You know, you never get the
roots
down.
Yeah, a lot like that. Yes, a lot like that. I really identify with army brats. There's a number of people who are on Skype that kind of comparing our backgrounds. It's the ones who have had that military upbringing, constantly being uprooted, that I'm probably pretty good friends with for the most part. I mean, there are other people, but it's just it wasn't fun. I was always the new kid on the block, and my ears stick out, and I was wearing glasses at the time, so I was a target. And I was also a smart kid, so double target, triple bullseye, you know? It wasn't fun. It just wasn't fun. And that really kind of propelled me towards this being really comfortable, totally isolated. I am absolutely okay with the stuff that I do, the artwork, model building, you know, now pyramids and stuff. I can be absolutely isolated for a week, and I don't care. I'm having fun. I am enjoying my company. I got really good at that. So isolation comes very easy for me, and it's not really out of a place of fear. It's just kind of a natural state of being for me. I really have to work at getting out and being social. I'm not real comfortable with that. One of the things that really made me do that was recovery. I'm in a group of 80 other people every Tuesday night sharing my experience in recovery. And what is really interesting about that is that in our particular group, we have to stand up to share in front of 80 people every Tuesday night. So in the beginning, that terrified me. Absolutely stark raving terror, because I didn't want to look stupid. I didn't want to be embarrassed. But what I found as I learned the process of recovery, taking on this spiritual toolkit that was freely given to me, starting to use these things, taking action in things I did not yet believe in, my life profoundly changed. I'm a gutter drunk. I lived on the streets of Seattle for 2.5 years, trying to drink myself to death. I'm still here. I'm not really sure why, but I'm grateful now. And what I found is that as I went through this experience of being absolutely terrified, speaking my truth, is that eventually, after talking to my mentor, my sponsor, a number of times, he said, get out of your head. It ain't helping you. Speak from your heart. And it's like, huh? He just said, let it flow. Disregard what's going on in your head. Just open up your heart and share. That's all you have to do. Because nobody here is judging you, and if they are, that's their problem. When you speak from the heart, it just simply flows, and people get it because of the resonance, the vibration of the truth. And you're not here to save everybody in the meeting. You might be here to help one person hear one thing. That's it. So what that did for me is that it made this daunting task. It removed the fear when I realized, oh, okay, I don't have to be the whole show. All I'm doing is coming to the picnic and bringing forks. This is the problem with most of us, is that we want the show to be great because it's all about our ego. So we try to manage everything. And the fact is that we all are unique. We're all a divine aspect of the Creator. We all have something very beautiful, very powerful to live. It's just an aspect. That's why we're created individually and uniquely. Every single one of us have something to contribute. I'm not supposed to manage the whole picnic. I'm just supposed to bring one little item, my unique little item, to the picnic. That's it. Because this whole thing, this whole planet is participating in this grand drama. We all have something to contribute. That's why we were this divine spark, this divine aspect of the Creator, to come and contribute something. And above all, simply get out of our heads where our problems exist, because there are no problems. They're only in our head. And help somebody. Instead of being of service to self, just try to help somebody. Assist them in some way. And what's really important about this spiritual law, and it is a spiritual law, I've used it, and it is amazing how powerful this is. when I'm assisting somebody, I do it with no expectation whatsoever what the result will be. I'm simply giving because it's the right thing to do. And I don't mean I'm giving them things. I'm just rendering assistance for what they ask for. It may be just simply a smile. We're way too locked into this physical world. Just because I'm helping somebody, it doesn't mean I'm giving them stuff. I can just be beaming them love and light and energy and a smile, and that's it. And that's a fascinating little exercise to do when you go into a grocery store or wherever you're going on this planet. Just smile at people. Look them in the eye and smile. And it is amazing the energy that's returned by not all people, but most people. And it will light up your life. That little price tag of expectation is really, really interesting in how it closes all the doors to the universe except one, where you expect that result to show up. We are energetic beings. Electromagnetic, energetic beings. Everything in the universe, there's very little material. It's point, I think the scientific realm has determined it's 0.0007% is actual matter in an atom. That's less than a thousandth of the atom is actual physical matter. One of the things that is really interesting is that you can change the structure of atoms energetically through electromagnetism. Our bodies emit electrical and magnetic. Science used to think that the brain was where the action was at. They knew that it was electrically stimulated and magnetically it had some energy too. What they found in the early 60s was that, oh, holy cow, the action isn't really in the brain because the heart is 1,000 times electrically more powerful, 100 times magnetically more powerful. We're beaming this immense energy that literally changes the structure of atoms out of our heart center. That is the secrets of the universe. We literally can control what appears physical, which is an illusion, around us. But we are so dumbed down and so steered away from this secret knowledge. And when you go back into the ancient texts and some of the artwork in the ancient texts showing these vortices, pyramids, these tetrahedrons, that's what this is all about. We literally have the power to change those energetic structures. That's why I think they were able to move 400-ton stones eons ago with ease. We literally had that energy, but we've been so dumbed down and de-evolved from what we used to be, and now we're coming back into the consciousness and coming back into the secret knowledge that has been hidden from us for so long. We are immensely powerful beings. We just don't know it yet. My experience of doing things with no expectation, literally, has brought heaven on earth. And the only way I can get this across to people is that I have had days that went by timelessly. I started in the morning, I was helping somebody, did it all day long, and all of a sudden it's evening and it seemed like an hour passed. It's timeless. That first marker that you're in the right place. The other one for me has been literally all the colors are brighter. And I've used this reference before because it always amazes me every time it happens, is that I drive a 1991 Chevy van. It's got an AC Delco radio in it, old radio. And that damn thing will be playing stereo when I'm driving home from something like that. And I... or heaven on earth exists when I'm in that state. And it's fascinating that it only happens when I'm being of service to others with no expectation of what the result should be. And it seems to throw open all the doors to the universe to give back to me. That's the only way that I can understand it or explain it. And it is absolutely amazing when it happens. And there's been a number of times to where I'm experiencing that, and literally, it surprised me the first time I did this, is that my face was cool. And I wiped my face and I realized I was crying. There were tears of joy.
So, this is one of the big lessons, is the idea that expectation, and I'm trying to find a suitable sort of, I suppose you could say that you might go into a place and you have an expectation about something, and that expectation is like holding a thimble out in the rain, hoping to catch some rainwater.
Yep.
That's Whereas a perfect analogy. If you have just a large sheet or a bucket that will catch whatever comes and be happy with whatever comes, because that drop that you would have caught in the thimble, be it a very, very special drop holding in a very special place at a very, very special time, the more precious you are, the less likely it is for that drop to hit that thimble. You know, you're expecting perfection with very little parameters of tolerance, which is insane.
Well, yeah, and I think maybe it's necessary to dive into the energy of expectation. What is it really? It's based in fear, is my surmising, is that it's based in fear, is that I'm doing this to get that, which is a very limited form of consciousness. And it's very old paradigm. You know, basically we've been told all our lives, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get that goal. And I don't know about you, but I did that going through school, and I did that when I went skydiving. I did that when I was flying. And I have to tell you, the thing that just nailed my coffin shut is that when I soloed flying, I felt nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because I realized at that point, holy shit, just another goal after this that I'm going to have to achieve, and it's empty. Why am I doing this?
What's the bloody point?
Right. And this is the whole thing that we've been funneled into. This training that you gotta set goals and achieve them, and you do this through absolute discipline, and if you fail, you need to try harder. Which totally negates the energetic flow of everything around us that is screaming at us every day. What are you doing? You're forcing things. Slow down. Stop. Turn left. Turn right. We don't listen to our intuition when it's yelling at us all the time. We've been programmed away from it. Our intuition is in our heart center. You feel it. Instead, we listen to the computer that's full of crap, our head. And this is what's so great about what I was taught with the spiritual toolkit in recovery, is that my mind rarely helps me, and I misuse it. And this gets more into other spiritual reading that I read, is that Our mind, we misuse all the time. The only thing our mind is really for is kind of constructing things, putting things together, figuring things out. That's it. That's it. It's to deal with the material world. We're supposed to live through our heart center. We're supposed to feel everything, because that is the true compass. I don't know about anybody else, but my heart has never, not one time, lied to me. And yet still today, I don't listen to my intuition. I get too wrapped up in my head, and I make a lot of mistakes, end up hurting people. I'm going, damn it, Tony, you knew better than that. But you went the logical route to get what you wanted. So ultimately, expectation, because I had an expectation of how this is going to run. I'm using my brain. I can get from point A to point B, point B being the expectation. Logic will get me there to get what I want, which is ultimately selfish. I'm not going to get what I want, or I think something I have is going to be taken from me. That's all ego. Trying to mitigate circumstance, domination and control. This is what we've all been taught. This is why we're in relationships that are abusive. We're trying to get something out of it, or we're trying to avoid something being taken from us. So I would ask, is that a loving relationship? When you're operating in that realm, out of your head? I think not. So again, all the master teachers, of which there have been many on this planet, they literally have told us over and over again pretty much the same thing. Get out of your head, get into your heart. Let your heart guide you. Through your heart, you will know, quote unquote, God. Right?
Yep. And the heart is the carrier of the second ray of love, wisdom. So it's a good counsel. Tony, we're coming to the end of the show. We're about,
yeah, sorry, got on a run there.
That's all right. You expressed yourself. That's the way. I am interested, though, as to what's your current state of footness. How can you...
Oh, I saw the surgeon yesterday, and she had to do a little more debriding. And it's healing up fantastically well. They actually, this wasn't originally on the table. What they told me is that after they opened my heel up all the way to the bone, and pardon me, people, because this might be a little disgusting to some people, is that they were
gross
going
alert,
to leave
gross
the
alert.
Wound. They were going to leave the wound absolutely open and let it heal from the inside out because of the infection that was in the heel tissue.
Yeah, I've experienced that myself.
Yeah.
On my least favorite, on my left buttock, in fact. Wonder what star sign that's all about.
Oh, that might be worth looking up. How long ago was that?
That was 27 years ago. Pain in the buttock. Anyway, meanwhile...
So, I would have to go in every day for intravenous antibiotics, full spectrum, really powerful antibiotics. They put a PICC line in my arm, which is a peripheral interior catheter. And it's basically a plastic line that's about 41 inches long. They stick it in right below your bicep, and it goes directly into your chest cavity. So they can basically mainline antibiotics in you every day. And having that PICC line, I would have to go in every day, and when they would do the PICC line antibiotics, they would debride that open wound every day. Pull the old bandage off of it, kind of scuff it up, take any gunk out of there. Just really painful. I did that every day. From August 8th until 3 weeks ago. So about 2 months' time. And I think it's really necessary to give credit where credit's due. Dr. Will Spencer, the body electrician, he has his own show on Wolf Spirit Radio, really helped me a lot with information and his products. And his thing, which was just so interesting because I actually talked to him, got some of his products before any of this stuff happened. And I was already using the advanced oxygen therapy, and I forget, there was something else I was using. But when he found out what had happened to me, out of his own pocket, he sent me like $250 worth of other products. And I'm still in the process of paying that back. But what was really important regarding the information he talks about, his premise, his platform is that Candida causes most diseases in our body. And guess what kind of infection I had?
A fungal.
It was a yeast infection driven by Candida.
There you go. Candida seems to be a lot. A lot to do with a lot these days. And it's a lot to do with sugar cravings and potentially it's a lot about your internal petri dish, all the different colonies that are around your body. Tony, we have to go.
We'll
continue some other time. Maybe join me on Journeys tomorrow. We can talk some more about this. You know, this is all the journey, and this journey's on foot. So
I don't know, on foot and spiritually.
Yeah, exactly. So,
JP, thank you so much for inviting me on. I had a wonderful time this afternoon for a Sideways Sunday. It was a pleasure. Thanks.
It's been fun. So, Tony Paschek, Wolf Spirit Radio, and everybody else, thank you very much. This is Ever Beyond. Good night. Beyond.